Hi, my name is Margot, and I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Margot.
And I'm very grateful to be here, grateful to see all of you. And this is a meeting on the traditions. And it's a women's meeting, and it is being recorded. So, in the spirit of the fifth tradition, to carry the message, this session is recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during this session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attending another session. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone up here so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. Will you please join me in opening with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. Our panelists for this session are myself, Margot, and Steve S., and we will each share for 10 or 15 minutes on the topic and then open it up for sharing or questions or comments. Again, we ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone and to be mindful of the time to allow others a chance to share. So I would like to introduce Steve, who will start us off.
Thanks, Margot. Thanks. I'm Steve. I'm a sexaholic. And I understand the topic is the 12 traditions and just generally what the traditions are for me as they've been described to me. Are there a series of principles, spiritual in nature, designed to protect the fellowship from my very best motives? And what that means is I came here with a pretty high opinion of myself in some areas and a completely abysmal opinion of myself in other areas. And I've heard it called egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I've definitely got that. And it's not gone. It's better than it used to be. But I often was pretty convinced that I was right about things. And the traditions are, for those who aren't familiar in detail, there are 12 traditions, and they describe principles which I think are, I see them as guidelines for the group of how the group can carry the message effectively that are very similar conceptually to how the 12 steps are guidelines for the individual, the growth of the individual. So the traditions teach me that the group is a spiritual entity that is going to grow spiritually, just like I grow individually when I work my recovery program. And one of the most challenging things for me, being legalistic and self-righteous, as I have always known myself to be, is that my first take on the traditions was, well, I'll read them and I'll understand them, and I'm pretty smart and well-educated. So after I get you know, familiar with it in about 3 weeks, then I'll start explaining it all to you all, so you'll be able to be function. You know, it'll be a better group after y'all hear all of my great ideas. And what I'm learning from being involved in SA service and working a program and learning that my problem is Steve, is that there's a lot of agreement about the principles that ought to guide us, and a lot of difference of opinions about what that actually looks like in application. And so the traditions offer me guidelines for how I can interact with you all and try to be of service. And ultimately, they take me back to the principles and the steps. I have a service sponsor. I've had one for about a year, and he's got a lot of experience in service in 12-step recovery, and he's taken me through the literature and helping me learn about the traditions and how they apply in actual service situations involving groups, intergroups, and you name it, on down the line. Everything is backwards in SA because we have a spiritual focus. No one's in charge. We look at service positions as moving down rather than moving up. The group exists to serve the individual, the needs of the individual, but the commonwealth for the group has to go above the common the needs of a single individual. And so we're like on a lifeboat and having to work together in order to survive. The disease is life and death for me, and I'll tell my story another day, but I really view it that way. So it's really important to me that I not rock the boat too much in the effort to make sure we don't sink. Sounds like some of my old behavior. That one of the key lines that my service sponsor points me to, if anyone has a 12 and 12 here, the first line of Tradition 12 is the spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. And the traditions challenge me to sacrifice what I know is right for the common good and to stay with the group conscience and be open to the fact, well, that even though I'm sure I'm right about an issue, I could be wrong. And most of the time when I relax my grip on what I think I know for sure, I find that my loving higher power can allow me to learn what's good and close to being right about what my preconceived ideas are, and he can remove some stuff that I just thought for sure it was right, but that was just not so. And when I look back at my experience in service, I think there was a time where I was looking at the traditions as something to kind of beat you over the head with to get you to do right. And when I was involved in service and I was in that mode, I was frustrated and I was angry and I was having to go away and call my sponsor and talk about what so-and-so said or so-and-so did. And, you know, there were all these problems. And at some point, I got an adjustment of attitude, which I'm very grateful for. And someone said to me, and I don't remember specifically who, but they said, you know, when all of those old-timers were busy, you know, doing it wrong, you know, before you came around with the right ideas, you were still out there acting out. And they kept the fellowship together so that there was a place for you to come when you got ready. And I needed to hear that. And when I look at it that way, I'm tremendously grateful that I can come and be with you all. And learn, these traditions are as deep as the steps. And there's a lot of good teachers out there. There's a lot of good teachers in here. I mean, the experience that you bring, and I think the bottom line, one of the fundamental principles in Tradition 2 is that the wisdom of the group exceeds the wisdom of any individual in it. And the only thing that's blocking us from accessing that wisdom is our own egos. And I can only deal with my ego. And I do that through the steps. So I try to bring my recovery to service work. And when there's a problem, it's an opportunity for me to grow. And spiritual growth is what this is about. I'll close by saying that in the long form of the traditions, it says that we lead by example, not by mandate. And whenever something disturbs me about another person's behavior, the steps teach me the thing for me to do is to work my program harder. Because when I'm disturbed by someone else, I can't have compassion for them. And when I can't have compassion for a defect in someone else, then I can't honestly inventory it myself because I just don't want it to be there. So this is sort of you know, what the traditions mean to me at my heart. I think they're really worth studying, and I think Margo's going to be a little more specific about the individual traditions. But I'm very grateful to be here. I'm very grateful for the traditions and the fellowship that we have today, without which I'm pretty convinced that I'd be dead or locked up somewhere. And I'm very glad that I'm alive, sober, and able to meet you all today. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Margo Sexaholic.
And
when I first came into program and I sort of heard of the traditions, I saw them on the wall or something like that, I just thought, I put them in my mind as with business meetings, boring things, rules, structure, you know, they just were something in the head. That's what I thought. And I kind of like business meetings because I like to be in charge. That's what the traditions are for, to protect against people like me, as Steve was saying. But what happened was that as I began to experience them in practice, as other people in the program used the traditions with me, I saw that they were completely different from what I thought. They're gentle. They promote safety. They promote the higher power kind of, where everything works out instead of conflict. And sometimes I've been in meetings at the national level, at the intergroup level, at the regional level, and in my own intergroup where there was a lot of conflict. And it didn't mean that work out doesn't mean that everybody ends up agreeing. But there's some kind of a process that the group can go through so it doesn't self-destruct. And a lot of times people say the steps are kind of linear. And they, you know, you do step one. You don't do step 12 before you've done step four. But I'm thinking about the traditions. I found that for me, they're different. They're not linear. The traditions all overlap, and they all create kind of a globe around the groups. I feel a globe of protection around me that's all interwoven by the traditions. And I was realizing as I was opening the meeting that this essay purpose that we read at the beginning is really a wonderful summary of the traditions. So we actually hear them every week. I didn't realize that before. I wanted to mention that in Step Into Action 1, 2, 3, there are some very nice writings about the traditions. There is a publications committee that's working on the 12 traditions to publish they've written the 12 steps. And you can actually contribute to writings on the 12 traditions at this conference tomorrow morning, 9:15 to 10:15 in McGavick C. They have just tables. You can go in and write on any tradition you'd like to if you want to. That's how these books were developed, is from a lot of people's individual writing all around the world, really. But in this book, there's under meetings in the very beginning, there's wonderful stuff about anonymity. There's another section about anonymity at the back. And there's a one-page section on working the traditions, which includes a summary of how it might apply to us as individuals. So I just recommend that to you. I also have some AA checklists, which is my computer ran out of ink. So I think, especially if you're listening to the tape too, you can probably find it online. It's from the AA Grapevine. And it's a whole list of questions about how to apply their traditions to me as an individual. But what I wanted to talk about were a few incidences in my life. I've learned a lot from breaking the traditions. And I seriously broke the traditions one time after a meeting. It was a small meeting, about five or six of us. We were sitting around gabbing. And one of the fairly new people in the group pointed to one of the people who'd been coming for a while and said to me, "Is she such and such," naming a profession. And I nodded and I said, "Yes, she's a," and I specifically said what she did. And that my friend was just so upset. And it turned out that this profession that she does is actually a very small group. It's a small community in our city. And so this woman who asked me probably knew all the relevant characters. And I just realized that I had revealed the identity of my friend just without even thinking. And that was one thing, that was a very painful experience. And another time in a meeting, after I had done some professional work with someone who showed up at a meeting, and it was years before, so the person probably wouldn't remember me. So I went up to the person after the meeting and reminded him of what we had done. And I went and told, and it just, it didn't feel right. I knew it was wrong. And I told my sponsor, and she said, yes, you broke his anonymity. And just to expand on those two incidences a little bit more, when I come to a meeting, I am safe. I am here without my labels. I am here without, nobody knows how much money I make. Nobody knows how much education I have or don't have. Nobody knows where I live or what my profession is. And that gives me a chance to relate to everyone as an equal. And it gives me a chance to be real without having all these different labels. Like the minute you know that I'm a such and such, I'm starting to posture. I'm starting to think, do I appear like a such and such? Are they thinking that I'm really a good such and such? I all of a sudden, I'm like outside my heart and I'm just into your opinion. I do that enough anyway. I don't need another label to help me do that. And we're really meant to be here as equals and to hear the messages that we each give to each other and not focus on who is the messenger. And I even like to take that to an extreme. When I'm in a meeting, I don't say, my therapist said. I say, if I have to say something, if I feel drawn to say something, I say, I'm getting some outside help. And this relates to many of the traditions. I feel like tradition one, which is about unity, tradition three, which is about the requirement for membership, five, which is about our purpose, six is about we don't lend our name to outside enterprises, 10 is about we don't endorse any outside causes. All those things really are saying the same thing, which is we're here for one reason, and that's to recover from the disease of sexaholism. And if I go into a meeting and say, I just went to such and such treatment center, and it's really great, then immediately it gets confusing. Like, does this meeting endorse that treatment center? And if I were a newcomer, I would think that maybe I should go to that treatment center. You know, it's different if I'm talking to you outside of a meeting and we know each other and you ask me for some suggestions, I might say something. And I know this disease is so devastating. It's very tempting. And I've had someone say this to me. We have to give people anything that will help them get better. And that's very tempting, but it's not why we're here. We're here to pass along the message of the 12 steps, the 12 traditions of recovery. And that's the focus in our meeting. The same thing with religion. There are so many issues, especially in SA, that cross over into religion or morality. They can. And I always try to think about the newcomer. How did I feel when I was new? One time somebody was overheard to say in our meeting, it's a great place to proselytize for my particular religion in the breaks, you know, and we ended up having, you know, a few of us went and talked to that person. That's not why we're there. If you want to talk about that, even in my private conversations with people in program, I'm very careful about that stuff. And I remember once talking to someone, we were talking about some kind of politics, I don't remember what. And we just came right up to this point. It was almost a visual image I had of coming up right to a point where we just noticed that we were about to violently disagree about something in politics. And we both just went back right down and changed the subject because we weren't really good friends and our relationship was mostly about program. And so for all these reasons, it helps me to feel Like I can come here and not be distracted and not be confused, and I just have an amazing feeling of safety from these traditions. I even heard in an AA meeting once, somebody shared that, let's say, you hear a speaker, and when she said, when I give feedback to a speaker, I don't refer specifically to anything they said, because maybe the person that they were talking about has come into the meeting late. And that was amazing to me. I thought, well, that's awfully strict. But then I realized, no, it really feels a lot better. And the other thing I wanted to mention was outside of meetings. This is one of the first experiences I had in program. A friend of mine called me up, and she started talking to me about some issue she had had with some person in program. She had been very hurt by this person, and she never told me the person's name. And she just said this, and it was obvious that we both knew who she was talking about, but the person's name was never mentioned. And I have followed that practice over the years, and I think it's so deeply important to me for a couple of reasons. One is, the most important, it allows me to focus on my issues. I am the one with the issue. Even when I call my sponsor, I don't say so-and-so and so-and-so. And over the years, a lot of times, I've been the recipient of calls from people on both sides of the controversy. And it's tempting to want to say, if you know the person they're talking about, it's very tempting to want to say, oh, yeah, well, she really has a problem with that. And that is just so destructive, because that's the person who's calling me is the one with the problem. And that is what we're addressing. It's not about the other person. The other thing is, and this is kind of an outside idea, it's not really a program idea. I don't know if I'm breaking a tradition right now, but I just think when you say a person's name, you are psychically doing something to their spiritual being or something. You're making a little tear in it. This is just my personal little spiritual thing. So it's just help. I prefer so much to not say the person's name. Let me see what else. Well, I'll just close by saying that, one last thing is other literature. I've seen that in meetings sometimes, especially in this program, because we didn't have specific literature for a while, and so people have brought other ways of doing the steps into meetings. I feel confused when I see a book that's not a program book on the table. Now, I personally, Essanon allows SA literature and AA literature as part of their conference-approved literature. We do not allow Essanon literature. I personally wish we would, but that's not our group conscience. So I'm not going to bring in a piece of Essanon literature to our meeting, because that would affect other groups as a whole. If I want to bring it up as an issue, I can take it to my intergroup and ask them to take it to the regional assembly, and they can take it to the general delegate assembly. Same way, if I wanted to rewrite the steps, that's affecting another group as a whole. So I just don't do that, even if my opinion is different. I want to mention about group conscience. I love group conscience meetings, because what I've heard over and over is it's not a majority vote. If we are discussing something in our meeting and it's kind of controversial and the vote is 4-5, we don't pass it. Now, they do in the General Delegate Assembly, with a whole process that goes with it, they have a 2/3 majority, but we try to do better than a 2/3 majority. And there's a whole process that you go through, which you probably already know, but where you discuss something. Everyone has a chance to share. You can go around the room as many times as possible. And then when you come to a vote, if there's like 8-2, that's a group conscience, I would say. But you ask the two people to speak about their opinion. And then you ask everyone else, did their speech change anyone's idea of what should happen? And then you ask the minority people, can they accept? And then for me, there's always a PS. You can bring it up at next month's business meeting again. but I just love that process of making sure that everyone's opinion gets heard. And the last thing I want to say is that I read in a meditation book one time a little phrase that said, God who prefers to remain anonymous. And that just made my heart feel so good, because it's true. God never, ever comes to me and says, I did that. I helped you then. Did you notice? God is just very, very, sometimes so much a part of my functioning that I forget that it's God. I think it's me. There's just, that's what I think the, you know, the feeling of being helped by the higher power is. So if God can be anonymous, I can certainly try to move in that direction. So thanks, and we'll open up the meeting to comments, questions, or anything on the traditions.
We got about 15 minutes.
I'm Betsy T. from Washington, D.C., and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. Thank you both for your thoughtful comments. And I really appreciate the reminder that the traditions are here to protect the group from people like me. of course, that is not good for my ego. My ego doesn't like that at all, because as it was said before, I want to think that I'm really here for all of your benefit, and I have a big investment in that thought. So I appreciated that someone shared his own humility and sort of got that topic on the table, that maybe my best thinking isn't good for the group. If you're in the room, you can see that Margo is smirking, and because she has personally experienced some of my best thinking. Fortunately, it's way in the past, and I was not allowed to do the kind of things that I really thought should be done for this fellowship. I'd be happy to share them afterwards. It's really a good loss. But basically, I'm the only person I know who's ever been kicked out of her group's inner group. I was chairman of my inner group, Washington, D.C. inner group, and I was kicked out. And it was because I had a very good idea that I had started to promote at a conference. My inner group didn't think so. That required a lot of step work, for which I'll never be sufficiently grateful. no, Sylvia was not my sponsor at the time. Since it's a woman's meeting, we all know each other, right? I just wanted to pitch, though, for the second tradition and what's already been said for about the group conscience. But for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. And I suppose I need to heed that our leaders are but trusted servants more, so I'm not going to claim perfection in that area. But I'm just so grateful that this program gets beyond our egos, or at least attempts to get beyond our egos, my ego, by saying that there is one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. And what that means to me is that the group conscience may turn out not as I want it to, but if we are really practicing the traditions, then each of us in participating in the group conscience, I think this assumes the best, which is that we've each been an expression of our higher power. So if I, you know, that hopefully will all come to an easy resolution, but it may not, but still, that is the expression of our group conscience. And I think that, I mean, that's the best CEO to have, is our you know, expression of a higher power. And of course, there are no presidents in Sexaholics Anonymous, and there are no gurus, there's no one person that knows it the best. We're all, as you know, the person who's most sober in the room is the one who got up the earliest this morning kind of concept. But that just is so unattached to my ego. That is so novel. And, you know, we were in a business meeting in Washington, in one of the groups in Washington, that a group that I started, by the way, I'll have you know. So, you know, and somebody who was fairly new had a comment that I just totally disagreed with, but it got carried. And I just wanted to condemn this person's idea because, you know, I knew better. And I guess what I just want to tell you is that feeling, like my better, it's an icky feeling, but it must be a good feeling too, that I didn't get my way. And thank God that there were people there who respected the traditions, and so they were able to say to me, Betsy, this is the group conscience. And by the grace of God, I heard them and was able to say, oh, group conscience is good, you know, even if it feels icky. So that was very intelligent sounding, wasn't it? So I just think that we're a blessed program because that is the guide. Our group conscience is our guide. And that it makes me want to be very prayerful as I participate in a business meeting, and knowing that that's an expression of the higher power, and that that's, you know, we think of the traditions as being dry and sort of, you know, mental, but they really are, they're for the heart as well, and we get transformed by them. I guess that's my my pitch, and I'm just so grateful to both of you for really thinking about this topic and caring for our program and being, you know, stewardship. This is stewardship of our program, and so I'm glad we all get to participate. Thanks.
Thanks, Betsy.
Yeah, I had a couple of related questions. I was wondering if you had suggestions about, one, when people come up to you asking for your personal information. I've never been quite comfortable dealing with that. Sometimes I've answered, sometimes I haven't, but I kind of freeze and I don't know what to do. And the other question that's somewhat related is when someone's asking you for someone else's personal information or asking to verify, or, you know, it's being talked about in front of you, is there a suggestion on whether to say something or not, or walk away, or what kind of suggestions would you offer?
Give us a more specific example.
They'll say something about somebody, or, and then, well, is that what you think, or is that true? And I may very well know if it's true or not, but how do I respond to that?
I'm Steve. I'm a sexaholic. If I understand the question, it sounds like is someone perhaps inviting me to initiate gossip or something like that? Kind of, yeah. That is a difficult boundary to keep. But I think for me, the traditions teach me that I'm supposed to behave in a manner that I would want to be treated. And so I am imperfect in this. I'm certain of that. But my ideal is that I would keep in confidence anything that I hear in a meeting, and that sometimes can be blurry for me and especially as I develop relationships with people in the program, and when I have friends and you know, oh, how's so and so doing, and so forth, because I begin to get attached to the fellowship as a family and develop relationships, and I think that's positive. But it's important for me to keep a boundary, and I do have a sense of when I cross that boundary or when I'm about to cross that boundary. And the hardest thing for me to learn is when I need to say no. And one of the things that I can do is in a commitment to honesty is that I can answer any question that you ask me truthfully if I choose, or I can say I'm not willing to answer that and let go of the outcome. And that one is much easier said than done, but when I practice that, I can live by these principles, and I hope that answers the question. Thanks.
Hi, Margo, sexaholic. I think, too, I can practice neutral phrases with my sponsor outside the situation. Like, I'm not, thank you for your interest, I'm really not comfortable giving out personal information. Because if left to my own devices in the moment, I'm going to say, that's my anonymity, which I did to somebody recently, and I owe her an amend. But it does help to have like a vocabulary in my mind that I practice with other people in the program.
We're good, yeah.
Hi, I'm Vicki. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Vicki.
I've been in SA for six and a half years, and I know someone talked about the second tradition. I started a women's group a couple of years ago in my area and really had to employ that one big time, because one of the gifts of recovery is that I'm developing the ability to initiate things and to speak up for myself and everything, but the flip side of that is wanting to control. And I remember starting this meeting and had very definite ideas about how it needed to go because I was really the old-timer. But I was fairly careful to, I think, suggest and rather than to be, you know, like in, someone presenting an ultimatum. But I decided that one of the things we needed to do was have step presentations every week. You know, there were four of us, but we'd each, you know, take turns doing step presentations because I go to other meetings where they do that. And I was really sure that that was going to fly. And I remember suggesting that in group conscience, and one woman said, that just sounds like too much work. We said her for being lazy, and then, of course, okay, well, you know, whatever, I guess I have to accept that. And I know I'm a champion grudge holder, and I can get very angry very easily, and so I really had to work to not develop a resentment, or at least to not hang on to it, because I know what I can be like and the chaos I can cause in interpersonal relationships when I do that. The other thing, I have a question, kind of like, I've been at meetings where Margaret was talking about people bring in books, actually non-12-step books, but books on the topic of sex addiction and whatever, and they have them on the table. And at one point, I almost asked a couple of guys to take that off the table and just have their essay and their big books on it. And I didn't do that because I'm never quite sure if, I was thinking I should develop a vocabulary because I'm never quite sure what to say and I don't want to offend anybody. Of course, I don't want to offend anybody. And then there's this one meeting where people are particularly devout. I don't know why it is, but it gets into people, instead of saying God or higher power, they say a particular religious figure. They refer to the Bible, and I don't know if that's okay or not. I'm not religious, so I don't care for it. And I remember we were doing the Serenity Prayer once, and this one guy kind of lifted up his hands and prayed like that, which to me speaks of a particular kind of religious worship. And I remember thinking, I'm really thinking, man, if I were a newcomer, I would assume I have to be a really strong whatever in order to be in this meeting. And I really didn't know what to do, and it bugged me because I'm not religious, and I think I'm the only one in SA who isn't, but even if I am, that's not what I'm there for. And I think it's so easy to confuse that because there's so many people who come and talk about God and sin, and that's what they're operating about, and that's not what it's about. So I don't know. And then there was another time where a guy talked about, he was a minister of such and such denomination, and he talked about, and there's a couple points in our theology, and I stopped him and I said, I'm sorry, I don't think that's right. And of course I was worried that he was mad at me, and I talked to him after. He said, no, I'm glad that you spoke up. So, I don't know if I'm kind of rambling, but I'm thinking maybe the idea of talking to people and rehearsing and developing a vocabulary, because these things come up, and for some reason I seem to be the only person that it bothers. Maybe because I'm one of the people who's been around the longest or whatever, but and since of anonymity, I can't go and build a coalition and, you know, get people on my side, which is the other thing I want to do. And the other thing I wondered is, you know, it says 11 is our proper coalition policy based on attraction rather than promotion. I'm wondering what other groups do to make themselves known if, because we're SA, we really can't promote ourselves or make ourselves all that public. So I'll leave with that.
Well, in terms of literature on the table, that happened recently. And when in doubt, refer it to a business meeting. For me, that's a lot easier than confronting the person as an individual, is to just say, I'd like to bring it up at the next business meeting about non-program literature in the meeting. And then you can really have the whole group talk about it. In terms of the other things you mentioned, maybe Steve has some good ideas.
Okay, thanks, Margot. Good questions. And I don't know if I have solutions so much as a perspective, and that's really about where I am in and my growth right now. I do definitely find that there are folks you know, whose behavior disturbs me in some way, and often it's very similar to some of the things that Vicki described. Where I'm at today, I also note that I can be really disturbed if I walk into a room and two people are talking and laughing, and I can assume it's about me. And so I can be disturbed when people are just minding their business doing exactly what they're supposed to be, and I can get disturbed. And whether it's a justified disturbance or not, I've got to deal with that disturbance first. And that really still today is one of the primary obstacles. When I do really believe that someone's behavior is kind of across the line in terms of traditions, I've got to realize that if I go and tell them in a very unspiritual way that you know this is wrong, or if I keep it to myself and resent them secretly, both of those are part of the problem. And so the program tells me to focus on my spiritual connection and to get at peace. And when I begin to look at others with compassion, the compassion that I need for myself, I begin to feel it for myself, and I get more comfortable in my own skin. And so I'm getting to the point to where I can go up to people in a loving way and begin a discussion with them. And usually it starts with the relationship. A lot of times I get disturbed when somebody's you know, talking about a particular religion in a way that triggers some of my abuse issues or whatever, makes me feel unsafe. I'm focusing on what's wrong about them. And when I just change my focus, a lot of times I can feel a lot better and a lot safer. And if I can kind of develop a relationship with them, then it becomes a lot safer and more comfortable for me to express my ideas and to be open to hear what theirs are. I admire people who have the ability to be direct and to confront with love. And I'm working on growing into a person who can do that. I think, though, for me, when I do get really agitated and smoke's coming out of my ears about, oh, they did this or they said that or they've got this up there and on the table and that's just, I hate that book and or whatever. The better choice for me today still is the prayer that I heard in another fellowship. God, put your arm around my shoulder and your hand over my mouth. And it is not an emergency for me to tell them what I think and what the book says, you know, or whatever. So, and I've heard it said if it's an emergency, it probably isn't spiritual. So, anyways, I that's rambling, and I hope it at least partially addresses the question. Thanks. Reading?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything you've heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. Let's take a group conscience to see how we'd like to close. They're suggesting Lord's Prayer, Third Step Prayer, or Seventh Step Prayer. Does anyone have a strong desire?
Third step, I have memorized.
Okay. I'm good, really good with that. Anyone else? Does that sounds like a group conscience to me. Shall we hold hands?
Or